Welcome to the Space Show, Justin and Megan.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, we're standing here at the Avalon Air Show with two model satellites overhead. What are we looking at?
So we have two satellites here on display. One of them is the Advanced EHF satellite. It's for tactical and strategic forces. It is designed to operate in all wartime environments for either nuclear, jamming environments, anything that an adversary might try to do to disrupt the communications it's designed to counter. The second satellite is the MUOS satellite, and maybe Megan can tell you a little bit about that one.
Okay, just before we describe that one, EHF, what's that?
It stands for Advanced Extremely High Frequency. So in the spectrum of radio frequency spectrum, there's, you know, AM, FM, like your radio station.
Yes, and people are familiar with the term perhaps VHF and UHF.
Right. And then EHF is just higher in frequency, so it's 44 gigahertz. We use 2 gigahertz of that spectrum to hop the signal around, so it's difficult to find and to do something with. So that's why it's called an Advanced EHF program.
And this other satellite now?
So the other satellite is MUOS. It stands for the Mobile User Objective System. It operates in the UHF band, but we've also added some new features that allow it to work with handheld terminals on the ground to a satellite that's 22,000 miles away. It uses modern wideband code division multiple access technology, WCDMA, to allow thousands of users to share that scarce bandwidth at UHF. So both of these are follow-ons to systems that the U.S. government has today. Advanced EHF is for a replacement to MILSTAR. MUOS is a replacement for, they call the UFO, UHF follow-on system. And they're both a leap ahead in technology, 10 to 15 times more capacity, more users, and more protection. They're both starting to deploy now in orbit. We have two Advanced EHFs on orbit, one MUOS, and we're looking forward to government policies pending sharing these systems with our allies.
And that gives the military on the ground worldwide coverage?
Correct. Yes, it does give worldwide coverage for the military.
So how would a soldier, we're looking at some pictures here of soldiers in the field, how would they use the system?
So most satellite programs, most tactical users don't actually have the satellite terminal. They usually work on a tactical radio, much like a walkie-talkie or something like that. And then if they need to talk to somebody at headquarters or back in Hawaii or somewhere like that, obviously their walkie-talkie won't reach that far. So the signal goes to a local point of presence. It might be on a vehicle or on a ship or an airplane, and then that signal would then get retransmitted over the satellite to some distant location. It could be 100 kilometers away, it could be thousands of kilometers away. And so they would use that point of presence would be what we call a satellite terminal. It'd be very much like the rooftop antennas people use to get television to their homes. So they look like that for Advanced EHF. The MUOS user actually would use something like a handheld cellular phone to access the satellite.
Now, the early satellites were just like relays in the sky.
Right.
I guess they would have been fairly easy to interfere with by an enemy. And you mentioned there's secure here.
Right. So, yes, there's advantages and disadvantages to any technology. And the advantages of satellites is they have a large reach, and then the beams can cover large areas. Like, you know, a lot of satellites are designed to cover all of Australia to provide television and cellular coverage and internet and things like that. So the same thing with these satellites. When you cover an area that the Navy or land forces want to be in, it's usually a very large beam. And if there's a potential for an adversary to be inside that in that beam that you may not be able to find. And you can usually take one of these, if you've been outside of a football stadium and seen the television vans with the big satellite dishes pointed up, you could take one of those vans and drive it around the countryside retune the frequency and jam pretty much any satellite you want. So if you decide, I don't like that team, I'm going to make sure they don't get on TV, you can just turn the right frequency and you can jam everybody's communications using that satellite. And so commercial satellites aren't designed to protect against that because they assume the risk is low and the cost of protecting it is higher than the risk. The military, on the other hand, is more concerned about that type of disruption. So electronic warfare is a key part of any advanced military that's trying to exchange information for tactical or strategic forces. So there's unique things you can do at the higher frequency bands in particular to protect against that type of threat.
When I was in the Army, communications was very limited. I mean, I was a driver operator. I used to run the radios.
Yes.
And it was voice only, no data. That's all changed now.
Yes. So, yes, the both of these systems are trying to respond to that greatly increased need for information and data, and it's mostly machine-driven. It's computer-to-computer communications now, internet protocol, video. That's the driving requirements. And MUOS in particular is an example where the UHF legacy systems today, they operate at 2.4 kilobits per second. That's basically a decent voice channel. What MUOS allows you to do by leveraging this new technology, you can take that channel rate up to 384 kilobits per second, and that's enough for a good video teleconference from your commander, or an intelligence feed from a drone that's flying overhead. And you can do that to a handheld with the technology on this satellite, which includes a 14-meter antenna to make sure it has the gain to close the link to those handheld terminals. Advanced EHF, on the other hand, has more bandwidth or more spectrum to deal with, so you're able there, the highest rate that will do is 8 megabits per second, which is a good data rate for a carrier or an Army division commander. And you can segregate that 8 megabits any way you want. You can have several megabits of video, data, and voice, and then you can share it at maybe lower data rates to lower units in the field. The total capacity for advanced EHF satellites is about 440 megabits per second. That's in the region. And the MUO satellite, we count in terms of channels, it'll support about 2,000 or 4,000 users simultaneously. Now, these are not the most high-capacity systems out there. Obviously, commercial satellites do much better, higher bandwidth for television and you know, up to 45 megabits and beyond. So we are looking at advances in both of these systems to extend the data rates and the number of users to try and satisfy some of that insatiable demand that our customers might have.
Most people here in Australia would regard 1 megabit per second as a good broadband internet connection, and of course the government's putting in the NBN, the National
Yes.
Broadband Network, which is promising, I think, 10 megabits per second
Yes.
as a standard. This is pretty good.
Yeah. Well, we've heard about NBN, actually. I think Lockheed Martin was... in some ways is hoping to be a participant on the space portion of that. I don't remember the details of that, but it's all exciting. I grew up in the country in Tennessee and in the United States, and I'm the same way. I mean, you know, you're lucky if you can get a dial-up network on your internet. So, yeah, 1 megabit would be great. But our users in the military, they're accustomed to having in their posts, their camps, and their stations, they have fiber to these locations now, and they expect to have the same type of service in the field that they have when they're home on base. So that's why I don't think we can ever stay ahead of the game. We can try to keep up as technology matures, and you're right, over a course of a generation, you're amazed at what the technology can bring.
Now, how big are these satellites?
So the advanced EHF satellite is about 10,500 pounds.
It's about 5 tons.
Yes, and the MUO satellite is about the same. It's about maybe a little bit more, maybe 11,000 pounds. The size is, I'm trying to think. I don't know if I have the dimensions, but it's the wingspan on advanced DHF is about, I would guess, yeah, about 10 meters, at least from this, from one wing antenna to the other. The solar panels are probably maybe 80 meters in total when they're deployed out to get the energy from the sun.
That's a pretty big satellite.
Yes, yes, they're very large.
And this this one over here, the MUOS,
yes,
has like a huge umbrella sticking up.
Right. So that's the 14-meter antenna that captures the you need a big antenna to capture a weak signal. And so when you're trying to serve users in the field that have cell phone-like connectivity, you need a large antenna to capture that signal and then feed it to the antenna array to process the signal to send it where it needs to go.
What's the approximate diameter of that?
That's a 14-meter antenna. And then there's a 5-meter antenna that's supporting the legacy UHF capabilities. So this satellite actually has a legacy capability that's very much like that UFO system I talked about. Matter of fact, it is this, a UFO payload that's on there, as well as the new wideband CDMA payload.
Okay. Now, Megan, the United States isn't the only country using the satellite system,
no,
I believe.
For the advanced DHF, we currently have the UK, the Netherlands, and the Canada. Canadians are part of our international partners. And again, we're working with U.S. policy because we'd like to expand that to our other allies.
Like Australia.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which brings you here to Avalon.
Absolutely.
Okay. And what would be the advantage to Australia if we didn't use the system?
Well, if you used it, A, you'd be interoperable with the U.S. and those other three allies. And B, I mean, these systems are very expensive, so you could actually buy a percentage of this bandwidth, and instead of having to develop a very expensive system on your own, this would be much more affordable and cost-effective for the nation.
Yeah, so it works out much cheaper for us to just piggyback on your system,
yes,
rather than develop our own.
Yes, it would be much, much cheaper for Australia or any other nation that would be joining.
Now, how many of these satellites is Lockheed planning to build?
Well, right now we're on contract with the U.S. Air Force for 6, and we just finished definitizing a contract for 5 and 6 block buy, and the U.S. Air Force is deciding what they want to do with 7 and 8 and beyond. Oh, I'm sorry. And then the MUOS satellite, we're currently on contract for 5 of them. There's one on-orbit spare, and the Navy is deciding what they want to do after the 5th one.
And what's the lifetime in orbit of these satellites?
These things last forever, pretty much. They usually last about 15 years. They've always exceeded their design life, so they're going to be up there for quite a while.
Well, thank you for joining us on the Space Show.
My pleasure. Thank you.